What's up, Brody? Hello, everyone. Welcome to the finals. It is our final NFL draft preview as we do a defensive preview today, and we are talking about some men's and women's final four, and it is the final countdown to the draft as we release this episode, officially 22 days away from the draft. And let me introduce you to a guy who's always feeling 22, and that is Captain Orange, Derek Rusnick. Derek, how are you doing today?
Hello, everyone out there. If you have not seen our Twitter, please go on to our Twitter. I am currently looking for a team to root for this year, as my Denver Broncos have disappointed me year in and year out. And so I am looking for a team that hopefully I can call my own. So, let's go vote on that so that I can, when we do the draft, I can have someone that I can look forward to.
And while that's also probably going to be in its final four, as you hear this episode that Wednesday morning, which is why you always want to catch us early. And, let's face it, it'll be final four Wednesday and championship Thursday. And we're talking about a couple of final fours because let's just jump into it, Derek. We start with the women's because they are doing it Friday and Sunday up at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland, Ohio. I hope they stay an extra day and get to check out the eclipse on Monday, as I hear that Cleveland is one of the big cities to see the solar eclipse. It's educational, NCAA. Let them stay an extra day and watch it. Derek, it's going to have the first game on Friday night between the NC State Wolfpack and then the South Carolina Gamecocks, who are 36-0. And then I don't want to say they're saving the best for last, but it's the matchup I find to be intriguing. The 8 o'clock game on ESPN is listing the UConn Huskies and the Iowa Hawkeyes. Obviously, this is the Final Four. Everyone who's been here has earned their way here. What do you think and what do you want to talk about from the women's game as far as this Final Four is
concerned? So first off, I want to say a big shout out to the Final Four teams. They have done amazing work this year, really have put some effort into getting here, and all of the other teams that were in the bracket. Congratulations on some great seasons. USC, we just watched the other night. Juju Watson, Watkins is going to be a really big star. There's some really talented ladies out there that are playing basketball right now. So congratulations to all those teams that made it this far. And to our Final Four teams, I cannot wait to watch these four. I'm titans of right now. I mean, we have the opportunity to have a men's and women's national champion from the same school, and we have two of them. We have NC State and we have UConn. It's going to be great. I don't know if South Carolina can be stopped, but I think there's a lot of the other three teams are very talented and can give them a shot.
I mean, we are talking about a South Carolina team that arguably feels like one of the most balanced teams, I would say, that I think I've ever checked out. I was pulling up some of their stat lines, Derek, and when I see that the top seven scorers on the team average between 8 and 14 points a game, there's not a, oh, we can just go and try to take out so-and-so and we will be fine. No, South Carolina, they can do it from all over the place, and more power to them. Don Staley's been coaching that team for several years, and it feels like they are just arguably, I don't want to say the new UConn or the new Tennessee, but South Carolina, Don Staley has made it the preeminent women's college basketball program at this time of the early 20s for sure.
Yeah, and I want to say that we are seeing a great future for both the women's college game and the WNBA. We're going to have some really great players probably coming out this year. Angel Reese might come out. We have Caitlin Clark. Paige Butkers there's just a bunch of names out there that I could say. And honestly, Don Staley is one of the trailblazers in women's basketball that I think helped both. I mean, in the late 90s, early 2000s, when she was, in the WNBA and kind of being that trailblazers there. And then after her playing career, went to coaching and has really set up a good culture and a good program out South Carolina. So, you know, my hat is off to her for everything that she's done for women's basketball. And, you know, I just think that we are, this is the beginning of, I think, the next superstar era in women's basketball.
I just want to go ahead and add this, that I think that women's basketball is growing, and it's growing well, and it's growing in a lot of talent, and it's a ton of people. Like you said, Angel Reese, she put up 17 points and 20 boards in their loss to Iowa in the regional. Like, that's an impressive performance, and it's unfortunate almost at this point that we don't get to see more of the talent this late, because there's that much talent. Like, it's not just two teams have it. It's literally so much talent around women's basketball. They're going to find ways to play well. Lots of teams getting a chance, and kudos to just in general, the athletic directors at UConn and NC State. When you can get both of your teams into the Final Four, that has to be an amazing feeling. I hope that your boosters are paying your private jet money between Cleveland and Phoenix the next few days, because you're going to need it.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I mean, we're seeing, even though it's not fully disclosed, we're seeing some pretty good NIL money going over to the ladies basketball game. Some reported numbers out there, I wish I could make in a lifetime versus what they're making in a year. So, kudos to them.
Absolutely. I will, just go ahead and add here that anything can happen. I think last year I probably looked at this and said, oh, South Carolina is totally going to take this. And then it was Iowa and LSU in the championship. And so, like, that's the thing, is that there's parity. Anyone can win. I think that it really could be any one of those four that would be deserving and an exciting champion. Are you ready to switch it up and go to the men's side of things, Derek?
Yeah, let's talk about, so we've got NC State, as we talked about a moment ago, versus Purdue. That is going to be on Saturday. And then around six central time, and then Alabama UConn on the other side. So we could literally have a UConn NC State national championship on both sides there. Alabama coming into this leading the nation in scoring, UConn being trying to go back to back, Purdue having Zach Edey and the inside game that he has, and then NC State coming. I mean, for lack of a word, they're a Cinderella team. They're an 11 seed, but honestly, the way they are playing at the end of the season in their conference tournament, we could see that they were probably not an 11 seed. Their record, you know, they had some ups and downs throughout the season. So just because they don't have that one seed beside them doesn't mean that they don't deserve to be there. And they certainly are playing their tails off.
They are. It's been really exciting to see DJ Burns, Muhammad Diarra, and just some of the ways that that team plays as a team, and to see them really go out there and find ways to get it done when they needed it. I definitely think that they are one of those teams that we're going to look back fondly on and be like, man, do you remember that year that NC State went as an 11 seed to the Final Four? Because we don't always get these moments. And when we do, they are so special and so fun. And so I'm just happy that we're getting it again. You know, sometimes we get chalk. I love for it to be a little bit messier. So I love having NC State here. Speaking of teams that probably were unexpected to be here, in the other matchup, Alabama is making its first Final Four appearance ever on the men's side. And they're playing, of course, the defending national champion in UConn. Is there anything that you're wanting to keep an eye on in that game, Derek?
Yeah, so when it comes to basketball, you kind of have two schools of thought in an overarching coaching style. Do you play your style and make the other team come to you, or do you make adjustments and try to stop the other team's style? It's going to be hard to stop Alabama from scoring. They've done a really good job this entire year and in the tournament to get here to the Final Four. But the experience and the big lights aren't going to shine bright for UConn. They were here last year. You know, they have a pretty experienced bench, all that kind of stuff. So, like, getting a overwhelmed if in the Final Four is not something that I think UConn is going to do. So you're looking at, okay, UConn is going to come with a team, and they're going to probably flex into and make adjustments to the Alabama offense and try to stop them. And then they're going to score enough points themselves to to win the game. So for me, I think Alabama's going to play their game. UConn's going to make coaching adjustments and play to Alabama's, try to stop Alabama from doing what they want to do. And, you know, sometimes that works to make adjustments and try to stop the other team. Other times the team just is so overwhelming that you just can't stop them. So we're gonna have a really good game, a really back and forth game. I think I don't see either one of these games for the teams being a complete blowout. I don't see a 15 point game or anything like that. I think we're gonna see less than a 10 point game up until the last few minutes, like last 2 minutes. I think we see maybe a 10 point game in either one of these games.
Well, Derek, let's go ahead and let's call it out. Let's make our predictions here. I don't know. Do you want to start with women's or men's?
Okay, let's go with let's start with women's.
All right. So women's, I'm going to go with what I put on my bracket. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go Iowa over South Carolina in the championship game. Caitlin Clark gets a win. The Big Ten looks really good, and I don't love it because I don't love Iowa, but I think it'll be good for them to be able to put a championship banner in the rafters there.
So I think you're correct on who wins these two games coming up this weekend, but I don't think you're right on the eventual winner. I do have Iowa getting there, but I think South Carolina is just so much of a juggernaut. They're playing a team game. And honestly, I think that they're going to take, I mean, Caitlin Clark's going to get hers. She's going to probably put up 35, 40 points. But it's going to be have to be everybody else on the Iowa squad. And like, I think you can kind of go down to, okay, you got Caitlin Clark. She's number one. You've got Martin, who's number two. Okay, well, who is going to be number three and four and five? And I think they're going to have to be the ones to step up. And I just don't think that they have enough to get past South Carolina. So I have South Carolina beating Iowa with a really strong game by Caitlin Clark in that championship game, but just coming up short.
I mean, I think that's fair. Like we said, anyone could win it. Mm-hmm. Switching over to the men's side, it's probably going to be boring and a bit chalky, but it's the way that I feel. I'm going to have Purdue facing UConn in the championship game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't like being someone who just goes with the team that everyone has said is the best and who appears to be the best, but I watched UConn versus Illinois, and with Illinois being a team I kind of had kept my eye on for a while. Mm-hmm. And when Illinois, who had arguably it was the third best offense in college basketball, got shut down for 10 minutes without a field goal with a future like NBA lottery pick on their team, I'm sorry. I can't deny what I'm seeing from UConn. I'm going to pick UConn to beat Purdue in the championship. They were looking that good. Congrats, Bobby Hurley.
So for me, I think UConn is the national champion. I remember back a few years ago, and I'm old, so when I say a few years ago, I remember Florida going back-to-back with Joakim Noah leading that squad and post-play. And with Billy Donovan as the head coach, for me, I think we will have a back-to-back men's champion at UConn, but I think Cinderella still has her, still has some shoes here. I think NC State beats Purdue, and I think NC State UConn with UConn pulling it out in the end for the national championship.
Don't get me wrong. I think it would be great for the Big Ten if they could win it. I don't see it happening for Purdue. And I hear you. NC State has every chance. Like, clearly no one has been playing better basketball since conference tournament started, since NC State. And I say that because they had to win 5 games in 5 days. So they've played more games than anyone since conference tournament started, because everyone else that's still left here would have been a higher seed.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I want to make sure that our podcast is not just us agreeing upon everything. And, you know, we generally agree on quite a bit of stuff. And so I like to be out on a limb a little bit, because that's where the fruit is. So, you know, if I show up next week and NC State has beaten Purdue, I'm just going to rub it in the face. Just saying.
All right. Well, let's switch it up. Let's go to that NFL draft. And let's talk about the players that we're looking at on the defensive side of the ball. We've already talked about quarterbacks. That was 2 weeks ago. If you want to hear about J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, all those guys and more, go find our quarterback episode from 2 weeks ago. If you want to hear about the big offensive linemen and the interior offensive linemen and the great pass catchers that are in this draft class, go listen to last week's episode. It's fantastic. This week, we're going to the defense. We're going to start at the interior of the defensive line, work our way to the edge, back up to the linebacker, and then go outside to the corners. And we don't have any safeties that we're talking about, because we don't currently see safeties that high in this draft class. There is no Kyle Hamilton or someone like that that is currently aware of out there. So we're going to mostly focus on corners, and maybe those corners become safeties one day, but not today. Derek, let's start with the the less some orange wearing defensive tackles that you might be aware of. First off, we've got Byron Murphy the second. He is listed as 6'1", 297 pounds from the University of Texas. And then we have a man whose name is a little bit more fun to say and very different. It is Jerzon Newton from the University of Illinois. He comes in a little bit taller and bigger. He is 6'2", 304 pounds. And yeah, Derek, where do you want to start with these two beasts on the interior? Do we have the future Aaron Donald here by any chance?
So I think that anytime that you put that name out there of, oh, the future, blah, blah, blah. No, Aaron Donald is always going to be in a league of his own. And I think we leave that one alone for a while. I will just say I've seen more tape on Byron Murphy the second because he was at Texas and in the Big 12. I definitely think he can definitely be that great defensive tackle that a team is going to need. I think he's a first rounder, no doubt. I think he's going to be a complete game changer. Looking at the teams that need a D tackle in their top four needs, we're looking like Buffalo. We're looking at Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, Houston, Miami, and Seattle. So wouldn't you love to have Byron Murphy II next to Aiden Hutchinson? There's a lot of really good teams in that need a D tackle right now, and that's what instead of needing a great offensive player, they're looking to bolster their defense. I mean, if I'm a draft pick, I'm wanting to go to a team that's got more established culture, more established, I'm a piece rather than the biggest thing on the defense. And so, there's some really good opportunities here toward the end of the draft with some of these better teams that I think Byron Murphy could definitely make an impact on a team very quickly.
I mean, I think in general, we're talking about two guys that have been very excellent. Byron Murphy, of course, the Big 12 Defensive Lineman of the Year in 2023. Jerzon Newton, the Big 10 Defensive Player of the Year for 2023. Like, they had fantastic times. Jerzon did not participate at the combine as far as all of the drills, so I don't have quite as much information on him. But when I look at Byron Murphy, one, he ran the 40 in 4.87. Please stop doing that. That is way too fast. So elite speed, straight line. His vertical was 33 inches. His broad jump was 9'3". Both of those are very explosive. 28 reps on the bench press. Nice. Anytime you're talking about alignment, and I think you're at 25 plus, that's what I'm talking about. And like, even when they look at, his shuttle and three cone drills from his pro day, he showed up well there too. Like, his relative athletic score is coming in at a 9.2, and they're doing that with the fact that they're giving him a 1 on height. Like, they are not like, they want him to be taller. They want him to be a bit bigger. But my goodness, with that speed and size that he has, like, he moves. And I think that strength and speed and athleticism, that's why we're seeing him up this high. Because anytime you can be in that position, I think that it is one where people look at you and go, oh, that guy can really do a lot of things. And I'm excited to see Byron Murphy up here. Now,
yeah, I mean, I think you got some good players in this D tackle. I will say that a lot of times the D tackle are the unsung heroes of a line. Is if they're not making the sacks or they're not making the stops or anything like that, but they are doing their job, playing within their defense. They can be definitely you know, not getting the star power that they probably should get.
I will say that as far as Newton is concerned, before we switch out to the edge, Derek, he was at Illinois. That's a Brett Bielema team. I know that Bielema knows a lot about working with the offensive and defensive lines. I'm sure you've seen him when he was with the Patriots, and then, of course, when he was at Wisconsin and Arkansas before. The fact that it says that Newton blocked four kicks this past year to go with 7.5 sacks, 52 tackles, like just being able to go and do a lot of the things that he does. He's just impressive. You know, he wasn't the defensive lineman of the year in the Big Ten. He was the defensive player of the year. He's a first team All-American, and someone's going to get him and be thrilled that there's so many offensive players going as high as they are in this draft class, because Newton is someone who I think could easily have gone higher in a different class for sure.
Agreed.
Derek, anyone else that you, or anything else you want to add about these guys, or are you ready to live life on the edge a little bit here?
I mean, I think we have to go living on the edge, because I mean, this is kind of these are the brand names that seem to be in the NFL nowadays, are those edge guys, those sack masters.
That's true. Well, let's go ahead and go through the top four at that position. And I'm going to start by giving myself the hardest name of this group that I have to say. Leiatu Latu from UCLA. He comes in at 6'5", 259 pounds. We will get to talk more about each of these guys here in a second. But the next one up is Chop Robinson from Penn State, 6'3", 254. After that, we have Dallas Turner from Alabama at 6'3", 247 pounds. And last but not least, and possibly the highest rated in this class, depending on who you talk to, we have Jared Verse, 6'4", 254, from Florida State, who should have been in the playoff for Jared Verse alone. We can talk about how they didn't have a quarterback or whatever another day. But Jared Verse deserved to be there. Derek, who do you want to go to first out of this board?
Yeah, so I like Chop Robinson here. Penn State always kind of flies underneath the radar for me. You know, we've had a couple of guys that are in our top, you know, top 32. And like we had an O-lineman, and now we have an edge player here. I don't know why I kind of just don't look at Penn State. I that's definitely something I need to fix for the future. But when you have, I mean, just on that right size, I think, is that 6'2", 6'3", frame in the 250 range. And honestly, this guy he's a prototypical guy to me, prototypical edge guy to me, where we're seeing them at now. So the Nick Bosa types, the, you know, Micah Parsons, which is the NFL comp that we have here for Chop Robinson. You're getting smaller guys, quote unquote, smaller guys that are speedier and who are, you know, they're very strong, but they're not going to bull rush down in, down out. And so I think at 6'3 and around 250, he's probably going to put on a little bit of weight and muscle when he gets into an NFL locker room. But I just like the way he plays. I like his motor. I like how he was coached up. And, you know, he comes from a good program. And, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, we have UCLA, we have Penn State, we have Alabama, we have Florida State, all really good programs and good coaching. And so you can kind of see how someone comes into the NFL when they've been coached up real well. looking at the teams that are in need of an edge, it'd be easier just to name the teams that didn't, because everyone is looking for an edge at the edge position. So you're looking at the Falcons and the Ravens would be two bird teams that I think you'd really like to see. You know, the Rams are shuffling their defense a little bit with some recent departures. You know, Tampa Bay with Todd Bowles down there, even though, you know, Todd Bowles didn't have a good stint the first time, I think he's really good with his defense. And I think this second chance that he's had with the Buccaneers has done a really good job with. So, you know, anybody could pick up one of these edge players, because it's like having, you know, you can change the game completely by having a sack or two in a game. And so, yeah, I think everyone's looking for that edge.
So, I mean, you started with Chop Robinson. I know his first name isn't really Chop. Apparently, he was nicknamed Pork Chop at birth because he was an 11-pound baby. And that is quite large. So, but that got shortened to Chop, which still sounds very scary and impressive. So kudos to him for that. I love when I'm reading some of the information about him that was put on here. They kind of described Chop as being ultra twitchy. I think if we're talking about the pure athletes in this class, his relative athletic score is a 9.71. He was coming in as the most athletic. Insane speed. So 40-yard dash is 4.48 with a 10-yard split of 1.54. That's crazy. Vertical is 34.5 inches. Broad jump of 10 foot 8 inches. Like, if your tackle blinks at the wrong time, Chop Robinson is getting behind him.
Yeah.
Like, there's not even a debate. I think that it is probably the reason why he is a first rounder, and why I think maybe we've seen, at least someone who looks at mock drafts regularly like me, I've seen him slide down a little bit, as I don't think that he is a lock to be NFL ready day one. I think that he is got freaky good skills, but I don't know, like, he does need to be coached a bit, and sometimes when you're using a first round pick, that desire to see them on the field having an impact right away, he might need a little bit more development than some of these other guys, at least in my opinion. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, we won't know until it happens, but you're probably right.
Well, let me go to Jared Verse for a moment, because I thought that what he was able to do there from Florida State was just quite impressive. His relative athletic score is coming in as a 9.57, but he is coming in a little bit taller than Chop, about the same weight. 40-yard dash is 4.58, but similar things on his vertical and broad jump. Like, 31 bench presses, that's fantastic. Like, and his 10-yard split is 1.6. So his burst is there, similar to Chop, even if it's not as long down the field. To be fair, normally you don't have to run 40 yards to sack a quarterback, but at least not the last I heard. I just think that he had 9 sacks. He was one of the top players on a defense that was really good at Florida State last year. And I really want to see what Verse brings as he continues to grow at this position. I think it's also interesting, Derek, because he started at the University of Albany as a tight end and switched to defensive end during the season. And then, like, it said that he, like, just completely burst on the scene, like, after that. Like, he switched during the season the first year, and, all of a sudden you have this person who was athletic enough to get a scholarship as a D2 tight end who is playing edge rusher. Like, that's sometimes scary. I think that it's going to be fun to see how Jared Verse comes with those tools, as I think he's still learning, but I do think he's a little bit more polished than Chop today. Are you ready to talk about these last two real quick?
Yeah, let's. So coming from the last of the Nick Saban guys, we have Dallas Turner here. In that same range I was talking about a minute ago, maybe a little undersized in the grand scheme of things. 6'3", 247. You know, once he gets into a locker room, he's definitely going to be eating some steaks and in the weight room. So 2023's SEC co-defensive player of the year. You know, maybe a little unheralded, as we might see other Alabama players, you know, bigger names or whatnot, but certainly a guy that can go out here and make a team better. We have the NFL comp as Brian Burns, which, you know, we've seen what happened with Brian Burns this offseason. If you're going to get a Brian Burns on your team, I think you're pretty happy.
Yeah, no one is going to complain about getting someone like that. I mean, I've mentioned some of the explosiveness of these other players. His relative athletic score comes in a little bit low, but I think that's just because he's a little bit lighter than some of the mm-hmm. other players that we have here. Like, he ran the 40 in 4.46. He had a 40.5-inch vertical, which is insane. And yeah, like a 10-foot, 7-inch broad jump. Like, he showed up. I think he was possibly leaned down to put up some explosive numbers. And then, like you said, he get some stakes, get that work in, show out later for the strength because the season's coming. But when you go to the combine, you know, people are going to look at things like 40-yard dash and over blow their minds about it. So you have a job to do there, and you have a job to do other times. I think Dallas Turner is definitely a great person to have. Like, he was a team captain at Alabama. He had 10 sacks. Like, he was a defensive, like he almost won a like off the field impact award, like, because he's just so good at what he does and is good in the community and mature academics. Like, he does it all. He's going to be a great guy to have in your locker room. And I think he's also a great player to have in the locker room. Last but not least, let's switch it up. Let's switch it up as we go to Leiatu Latu from UCLA, who's got one of the more interesting paths here. He was listed at 6'5", 259. They gave him a NFL comp of TJ Watt. His 40-yard dash was 4.64. It's a little slower. 32-inch vertical, not as explosive. But I thought it was really interesting because he won the Lombardi Award last year for the nation's top/offensive or defensive lineman, and the Ted Hendricks Award for the nation's top defensive end. I think that he could be someone who's going to come out and do a lot of things. He had 13 sacks last year. And, like, for a long time, he actually was unable to play up at Washington because he had had neck injuries. And so, like, he's come down. He played a ton at UCLA. He got cleared by their doctors, which I don't claim to know how good the UCLA doctors are, but you don't clear someone if you don't trust it. And he was fantastic. So I think that it's going to be interesting to see kind of what this path looks like. what they say. Because when they're giving you an NFL comp of TJ Watt, I'm sorry, that is fantastic. So I want to see what happens for Latu in the NFL. Derek, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so you made some really good points in the grand scheme of things. He is the biggest guy that we have on our list here, 6'5", 259. You know, it's weird to say, like, oh, okay, well, a difference of 5 pounds or a difference of 12 pounds makes a huge difference. It really does. So it goes kind of on how you're playing and how you are, you know, are you a speed guy? Are you a power rush guy? Are you going to push guys out of your way? You're going to get around the end, all that kind of stuff. You know, the NFL comp of TJ Watt, he does all that kind of stuff. He can push, he can pull, he can get around guys with speed. And so, you know, we'll see what happens when it comes to, you know, the NFL and see where he lands on that. You know, anyone with an injury history, you worry about a little bit, but at the same time, you know, if we have a healthy, you know, when you get to the NFL, you're generally have better doctors. So, you know, professional guys that are, keeping you safe and keeping you limber and all that kind of stuff. So I think we're looking at a guy who, let's hopefully he has a long NFL career, and we could definitely see that name on a defensive player of the year trophy.
For sure. We're going to switch it up and go to linebacker. We've only got one, and I'm going to make it, I don't want to say short and sweet, but we're gonna zip a little bit here, I think, because we're talking about Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M. He's listed at 6'2", 230 pounds, and I love that they gave him a NFL comp of Devin Lloyd. I was a huge fan of Devin Lloyd out of Utah when he came to the draft and got drafted by the Jaguars late first round. I think there's probably some debate on what linebacker is actually the best linebacker, and if we're going to see one in round one at all. I know if you look at a lot of the scores from after the combine and pro days, a lot of people are hyping Peyton Wilson out of NC State, elite university NC State. I don't think I have to say that after this earlier segments about the Final Four. And but Cooper, like, he had 8 sacks last year. He was first team all SEC, first team AP All American. Like, he's someone who is known for what he's able to get done on the field. And he showed up as a good athlete as well with a 4.51 speed. So sometimes I think when you are talking about a linebacker, we're not talking about these edge rushers where occasionally they're going to get to the quarterback and make their play. You need to have someone who's reliable time in and time out. And some of that goes to their mind that you can't really see. So I think Edgerrin Cooper, you know, a lot of people are finding value in him. Will he be the first linebacker taken? I don't know, but I think he's got good speed. I think he's got good tackling, and that's something you don't want to undervalue. Do you have any thoughts about Mr. Cooper here, Derek?
Okay, so I'm going to have Derek Azol's segment of the week on our linebackers here. So I remember linebackers in the NFL and what they used to be. Sam Mills down in Carolina, Luke Kuechly, also in Carolina, where you didn't run in the middle because you would get your helmet knocked off. It seems to me with the change of rules and the more pass happy teams out there, you know, like, I mean, we talked about the quarterbacks last week and why we have 6-7 guys that are expected in the first 20 picks that are just quarterbacks. You know, we have seen a resurgence of running the ball and, you know, making sure that you have a running back over the last couple of years. It has been running back by committee. You're putting two or three extra spots on your roster for those running backs that you can kind of cycle through. So this is a type that I want to see a linebacker go take somebody's head off. Just old school linebacker in the middle, making sure that no one rushes up the middle. And from what I have seen, I think Cooper has that potential. 6'2", 230, and an athletic score of 9.1. You want to see, you know, see what he can do. Texas A&M has always been a school that has been kind of a mystery to me, because there's some guys that come out of there that are really great players, and there's some other guys that you think are hyped, and they're way overhyped, and they don't show up on the field. So I can't wait to see what we have here. And, you know, NFL, if you're listening, I know Commissioner Goodell, you're a longtime listener. You know, let's get back to smash mouth football, linebackers and running backs meeting in the hole.
I like what you're talking about, Derek. And I think there might be more of a veer back that way. I think that we might be seeing that more with Derrick Henry joining the Ravens this year. I feel like the Lions are trying to play more that way, but it's an ebb and flow, and we all know it. But while we're talking about potentially stopping the passing game, let's switch it up and go to the cornerbacks, where we have two groups here. The first one that we're going to dive into today, we've got Terrion Arnold, who's coming in at 6 foot, 189 pounds from the University of Alabama, because we've talked about them a couple times tonight. Next up, I think he might be the only group of five guy we even have on our defensive list today, is Quinyon Mitchell from the University of Toledo. 6 foot, 195. And I've got to say that I was double checking relative athletic scores for this year, Derek, and I realized that there is a cornerback named Storm Duck who I don't have on the list. And it makes me upset that there is going to be a player whose name is Storm Duck that I don't get to talk about more. Storm Duck, number one overall, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have 2 weeks from now, we're going to have a podcast just about Storm Duck.
Maybe there's a chance we might cancel that one. Don't get too over teased about that. Okay. who do you want to talk about first, Arnold or Mitchell?
Yeah, so let's go Arnold. This guy, really. I mean, everyone's talking about him out there at cornerback. I saw a video of him going back to his high school and, like, giving his jersey to the janitor that was always there for him when he was in school. And was, you know, I think a lot of times that we have some unsung heroes for guys growing up. That you don't really realize. Like, I remember my elementary school janitor because of the times someone would get sick or whatever, and we always saw him. He was always had a smile on his face and always loved the kids and all that kind of stuff. So when you see you guys go back to their hometown, you know, about to be you know, a big NFL star and, you know, high drafted, and still have the you know, still being humble enough to go back and say, hey, thank you for being that part of my life and supporting me and all that kind of stuff. I think I love to see that kind of stuff. I mean, we can talk about this guy for days on, you know, 6 foot, 189 pounds, relative athletic score of 9.23. You know, we're going to be calling his name dozens of times a football season for the plays that he's going to make. I think he has a bright future, good coaching coming out of college, and just about any kind of team would want a guy like that. Looking at the NFL teams that we have, you know, of course, KC, you know, Super Bowl champions, have lost a couple of guys. Arizona, you know, maybe a Denver or Detroit could be good. A Green Bay might be fun if they jump up there and get them. But we're looking, just about any kind of team would want a cornerback out there right now. San Francisco is in need of some secondary guys, and like Tampa Bay and Tennessee are revamping what their secondary looks like. So I don't think that we're going to see, we're definitely going to hear his name on night one, and we're definitely going to see some great plays out of Arnold.
I hear you. I really do. And I think that this is going to be interesting because I think Arnold is great. I personally would almost make the case that I think the best corner in this class is Quinnen Mitchell. His relative athletic score is coming in at a 9.8. And when I look at what he's able to do, there are certain things that I see and I just go, you can't teach that. Like Terrion Arnold, his 40 is 4.5. He's not slow. Quinnen Mitchell's is 4.33. Like, you cannot teach 4.33. And like, he has a 38-inch vertical, very impressive, and he also did 20 reps on the bench press. You tell me that you want him to go jam someone, I think he can get it done. You tell me that he needs to play off and he needs to be able to cover with speed, he's got the speed. I feel like Mitchell is a little bit more of a guy who can do for sure what I think everything is. And I know he's coming from the MAC, so I think that some of his is going to be adjusting to the quality level of receivers that are against him. But he also showed up really well at the Senior Bowl. He has shown up well throughout the draft process. And so I really think that Mitchell is someone who is going to shine on the big stage. It's just a matter of how quickly he gets his name up there. I like him a lot, Derek. I don't know if you can hear it like dripping off my voice, but I feel like it is like we might call them 1A and 1B out of this draft class at corner, because I would say Arnold's been at Alabama. Like, he's faced Malik Nabers. He's faced Ladd McConkey. He's faced some of these top receivers that are coming out in this draft class. Quinnen Mitchell went to Toledo. I don't know Toledo's schedule, but Tuesday night action is not the same level for the NFL, unfortunately.
Yeah, I just think that you don't have quite the same tape on Mitchell as you do on Arnold, and that's okay. I mean, when you have that much speed, that much athleticism, frankly, you're going to go out there and, you know, year two, you're going to be like, because you're going to get accustomed to the wide receivers that you're going to see. And you're also going to have to go up against wide receivers from the NFL every day in practice. So I think that that is a learning curve that you can definitely coach up, not having seen, you know, not playing down on down versus, you know, high level receivers in the MAC. But yeah, I think that that is something that is going to change quite quickly.
Absolutely. Well, let's go to our second set here, which has three cornerbacks. We're going to start with the man from Iowa, Cooper DeJean, 6 foot, 203 pounds. Arguably Iowa's best offensive player as well. Uh, Sorry, I said too many nice things about Iowa earlier. I had to get a jab in here. Next up is Ennis Rakestraw Jr. from the University of Missouri. He's measuring in at 5'11", 183. And last but not least, we have Nate Wiggins from Clemson. He comes in at 6'1", 173. I feel like we've got an interesting set of guys here, Derek. Tell me who you want to talk about.
Okay, so I'm going to jump on the Cooper DeJean train real quick, because I think that you have to, you have a certain level of courage, let's call it courage, where you know that that the defense has to go out there and stop every offensive play that is happening, period. You know that if you mess up that and you let a pass get behind you and you give up 7 points, that you're probably going to lose that game. And that is how that defense went game in, game out. And they won, they got to the Big Ten championship game versus Michigan. I don't know what that kind of pressure, like, I know that at my job, if I mess up, someone else is going to be there to clean up a mess once in a while. I do my very best, but if I make one mistake, doesn't change the outlook of someone's world. This guy lets one pass get behind him, and it is death threats. It is the end of the Iowa season. And so I don't know how you sleep at night, but I bet Cooper DeJean is much happier going to the league and knowing that he's probably going to be on an offense that can score 12 points in a game. But for me, I said, I talked about Cooper DeJean. I have a lot of respect for him. But for me, Nate Wiggins out of Clemson is my guy that I can't wait to see what he can do. So Clemson has had a couple of down years. They used to be in the national championship hunt year in, year out for, 7 or 8 years there. Clemson has, like I said, a couple of down years. They've gone through some quarterbacks to try to get back into prominence. ACC is, this year was the Florida State to take all that kind of stuff. But Nate Wiggins, stand out on that defense, and a guy that one of the better players out there, and just can't wait to see what he can do when in the transition from he is one of the smaller guys here, but with his skill set and getting into a program, getting some meat on his bones, if you will, and going out there and going, ACC, it's just like the SEC where you see a lot of great receivers. He's got that experience and he's done a really good job. So, I can't wait to see what he does in the NFL.
So you had me curious with some of the things that you were saying about Cooper DeJean. And I know you just were talking about Nate Wiggins, so I'll try to sprinkle a little bit of topic on everyone here. But I had, like, not everyone knows this, but I was originally born in Iowa, so sometimes I check out stuff about Iowa, and I saw Cooper DeJean his hometown was listed as Odebolt, Iowa, and I was like, I have no earthly clue where the heck this town is. Google it. Less than 1,000 people. Okay, so he went to a tiny high school that was a consolidated school between some of the towns in the area. And when I looked it up, it said that he played quarterback and defensive back in high school. So Derek, his senior year, 3,400 passing yards, 35 touchdowns, 1,200 rushing yards, and 24 touchdowns. It said that in a 2-minute span in the state title game, he had 2 tackles, returned a punt 14 yards, completed 2 passes for 52 yards, rushed 3 times for 22 yards, and scored 2 touchdowns and a 2-point conversion. He also played other sports. Apparently, his career points in basketball has him behind TJ Hawkinson, but 55 ahead of Harrison Barnes, who is actually an NBA player.
Yeah, okay.
And then he had the fastest 100-yard dash time of any runner in the state during his senior year. And it's things that I just look at and I go, wait, what? And I'm just like, this guy just does it all. Big Ten returner of the year, Big Ten defensive back of the year. He's an athlete that likes playing corner. So I'm excited for him to be in this draft and be in this spot. I will tell you my potential concern about Nate Wiggins, because Nate Wiggins is crazy fast. He had a 4.28 40. His relative athletic score is a 9.44. 6'1", 173. I need him to eat some steaks. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he likes about it, but I just think that he needs to bulk up a little bit. I'm worried about him getting pushed around. There was probably a reason he did not do the bench press at the combine with that height and weight. It was built for speed at that point, not for that. You want to talk a little bit about Ennis to close us out with the corners here?
Yeah, so with this, we've talked about everybody else. I said just a moment ago, talking about Clemson, that they have had a couple of down years or non-Clemson type years. I'm going to go back and I want to apologize to a lot of Tiger fans, because Ennis Rakestra Jr. Comes out of Missouri. And I have kind of written off Missouri for the last few years because they haven't, they were many years ago. They were a Big 12 school. There was a lot of nice rivalries, because they're so close to Oklahoma and work on Oklahoma-based podcast. I watch a lot of Missouri football. They went to the SEC, and for a while they really didn't do anything. But I think they might have been that sleeping tiger that you hear about, because they have all of a sudden, we're seeing players come out of Missouri. Missouri is having some really, really good years. I mean, they're not, title level years, but with an expanded playoff, 12 teams this year, we could definitely see over the next couple of years, a team like Missouri come through and, put up a stink. We talked about Nate Wiggins and him being 173 in official weight. But he was at 6'1", so you can always put on some weight at 6'1". Ennis is 5'11". Even though he is 183 pounds, I'm not sure. I mean, it's a lot like what you would hear when you are in the dating pool, that the difference between 5'11 and 5'12 is significant. It's the same thing happens in the NFL. We have heard so many jokes about Kyler Murray. We've heard a bunch of jokes about Bryce Young. Of course, those are quarterbacks, and this is a corner. And corners don't have to be tall. They can be speedy. They can be, they can be good at their position and not having to have the height. But I think when you come into the league and you're not Darren Sproles and your height starts with a 5, people don't take you seriously. I want Ennis to definitely make an example out of this. I want him to prove everyone wrong. I would love to see what happens with a quote unquote shorter man in the NFL.
I definitely think it's going to be interesting because I think that Rakestraw has a lot of things. I know that he's also been hurt a little bit in college. He missed a season with a torn ACL. He missed a few games this past year. I don't know if that's going to be a cause for concern or if in general, because we have 4 6-foot or higher corners, if he's kind of going to be the leftovers in this group, because when you can get the height, people want to get the height. You can't change it, Ennis. Like, it's not your fault, but it's got to be frustrating that that's so critically evaluated, kind of like you said, Derek. I do have to add a final thing about Cooper DeShaun, because not about where he came from or anything, but it does say that he actually, as we were recording this earlier today, he was cleared for football activities. So he's actually going to be able to do a pro day on April the 8th. So, like, we don't have anything on him because he broke his fibula at Iowa this past season, as far as, like, his 40 time or anything like that. But the fact that he's been cleared and we should be able to get something, I'm impressed with his work ethic. I'm impressed that we're getting to that point. I don't know if that surprises you, Derek, or if you had seen that earlier, but the fact that he's cleared and is going to basically have his own pro day is pretty cool.
Yeah, so I did. I appreciate you bringing this up because I did see this earlier and it just slipped my mind. I am looking forward to seeing physically what Cooper DeShaun can do. Because I bet that he, now that he is completely, cleared, that we're going to see a spectacular pro day out of him. I bet he has been working so hard to, like, perfect exactly what he's got to do out there. Because it's a lot on his shoulders that I think that, a lot of expectations and, he could be marching up the, we always see, guys marching up the draft boards because of a good pro day. But you go to these bigger schools and you have the wide receiver or you have the quarterback or you have this guy or you have that guy going to be by himself. So there's only him that everyone's eyes are going to be on.
Definitely. And we'd like for you to keep your eyes on us. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. As Derek mentioned earlier, check us out on Twitter because we are running that poll of what team Derek should cheer for next year. And if you want him to cheer for your team, or maybe you just don't want him to cheer for one of the teams that's listed, you got to get your votes out there. So, like I said, I'll be posting that Final Four on Wednesday morning, championship on Thursday. So you'll want to make sure you get your votes out there so that Derek can cheer for a good team, potentially the Green Bay Packers if they're still in it, because I happen to be a big fan of them. You could say I love them and I am a part owner, because those are all factual statements. If you don't want this to become a Packer podcast, vote for someone else, maybe. I don't know. I'm okay if you vote for the Packers, though.
I have seen some really great teams in those Elite Eight matchups last look. And I'm pretty happy with our listeners, putting some good teams out there.
Absolutely. They know what they're doing. So, with all of this being said, thank you for listening. We know that you could listen to a lot of podcasts, but we appreciate you listening to ours. On behalf of my fantastic co-host, Derek, my name is Caleb Walgren, and we are signing out. Later, y'all.
Goodbye, guys.